podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the AI Premier League Preview Pod. The night after a very satisfying derby win over Everton, with Sadio Mane's cruelly stoppage time goal. I wanted to introduce this week. We're going to be speaking about Stoke City as the festive fixture list really sort of racks up and we get into it. And on the pod this week, I'm joined by RT America reporter Alexey Yaroshevsky, back on the pod again, and Stoke season ticket holder Adam Hindhoff. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
No, good to have you both on. Plenty to talk about. And like I was referring to, so that derby win yesterday, still raw, still good. But before we get into Stoke City and before we get into all things Liverpool, I just wanted to ask you both, given that we are approaching that sort of festive fixture list, what your sort of favourite Christmas football memories are. And this is a vague question, but it can be anything from a particular goal to a particular match or a particular scenario, just whatever you like, really. Just looking for your favourite sort of Christmas football memories. And Adam, come to you first.
Yeah, for me, I smiled when I saw this because this is probably one of my most favourite Stoke memories, actually. 26th of December 1989, I'd have been 10 years old, and at the old Victoria Ground, Stoke City played Manchester City. And it was the days where it was inflatable heaven. I don't know if you remember those days where each club seemed to have an inflatable mascot assigned to them. Stokes, for some peculiar reason, we had inflatable Pink Panthers. And Manchester City had inflatable balloons, bananas rather. So the game was, I think it was Stoke's highest attendance of the season, 24,000. I think Manchester City brought near on 10,000 to that game. And it was a very entertaining game. Stoke won 3-1. And I just remember just a sea of yellow bananas down two sides of the Victoria Ground. It was a sight to behold. And I think we were unfancied that day to win. But as I say, Boxing Day 1989, we won 3-1. So always sticks in the memory.
Yeah, you do always seem to get those, the fancy dress around this time of year as well. Plenty of people in your Father Christmas costumes, things like that. Just that sort of atmosphere, really. And you're hoping that the games will sort of live up to the fact that you've dragged yourself to it in the midst of Christmas, etc. Yara, I mean, do you have a particular memory from this time of the season?
Well, when it comes to Boxing Day games or Christmas or post-Christmas games, I don't really remembers anything super spectacular except for one game which I actually attended. It was back in 2005 in December. It wasn't exactly the Boxing Day match. It was on December 28th, because on the Boxing Day that year we played Newcastle at home and we won. I think it was 2-0. And then on the 28th, just 2 days later, we had the game against Everton. And that game I went to, and it was just a joy to watch Steven Gerrard, Peter Crouch, and Jibril Cisse scoring goals in that game, all in the first half, basically putting the game to bed. It was just a beautiful game to watch. That is definitely my favorite game from the festive season. But I also have my clearly least favorite game from that season, and that happens to be the game against Stoke City back in 2012. We all remember that game when everybody was, ranting about referees, and that match was refereed by a very controversial referee, if you remember this guy, the baldy head from Manchester. And he gave a penalty on third minute. Gerrard scored it, but then we lost 3-1 to Stoke City. And this was a heartbreaking game to me, in the festive season when, the moods are supposed to be high, and we were doing well in that season as well, moderately well. And that I can remember as well. So it's both. It's a bit of both, a good win against Everton, on the 28th, and then lost against Stoke City on a Boxing Day.
No, yeah, I was trying to rack my brain, and actually, I may have got this wrong, but I can't remember. But we played Man City. I think it was the 13-14 season. Liverpool played City around Boxing Day, and that was
after. We lost two games in a row, City and Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly, that was City and Chelsea. But up until then, we'd been doing really well. We were top at Christmas, etc. Plenty of spirits high, etc. And we played so well in that game. I remember Sterling doing his classic thing, in front of an open goal that he seems to still do, which is find some way to miss it. And there was plenty of dubious offside decisions as well. But it was one of the first games where we saw some of the magic between Coutinho, Suarez, and some of those link ups as well. So that's certainly a good memory. Despite the loss, it was just like, we went there and really played them off the park at some stages, and then Miggs, Negredo. And that's all in the past, I guess. So we should probably not speak about that season too much because it never ends well. So I want to move
it
on.
It still hurts, yeah.
it's still a bit painful. Let's move on to the preview and bring Adam in just to talk about Stoke and how it's going this season. So I did say it sort of only seems right that during the festive season that Liverpool play Stoke at some stage. It seems to have cropped up again and again in the fixture list over the past couple of years, but that stereotype of, it's going to be a tough trip away at the Britannia, physical approach, long ball, that's sort of been eroded in the recent years under Mark Hughes, doing a pretty admirable job, we think, from the outside in, to evolve, Stoke stylistically, I think, and bring in players that, in years gone by, you would never have imagined would have been of interest to Stoke, and some real top talents there as well. So I just wanted to talk to you. And you're currently sitting 11th in the league, but without a win in three now, I think, following that draw against Leicester. So I just wanted to touch on that first and foremost. I mean, 2-0 up in that game, and we've seen how Leicester have been playing recently, really struggling to sort of get results. What happened?
Yeah, it was a bit of a crazy game, really. We've not won in three, but I think it's two defeats in 11. So it's we're on a not a bad spell. Leicester came without a win, I think, away from home all season. Shadow of their selves from last season, obviously. And Stoke made a really good start in the game. We created some really good early chances, good passages of play, good link up. Bojan was brought back into the team. Him, Allen, we're linking up nicely. And Leicester really weren't a threat at all, and they were quite disappointing, really. Obviously, the red card happened, quickly followed by the penalty. That kind of kicked us into life a little bit more. We started to dominate the game. Leicester totally lost the plot, lost their discipline, bad fouls, dissent. They were just there for the taking, and the dominance quickly added a second goal, and we were just in total control at half time, and you could only see one winner. Second half, similar start again, created a few early chances, but then we just started to lose a bit of impetus, and it's happened a lot. Stoke seemed to go 2-0 up and then think the game's over. We go complacent. Mark Hughes' tactics are being questioned, particularly in this game. Some are calling it the worst moment in his career as a Stoke manager. Didn't adapt, didn't change, didn't see what was coming or saw what was coming, and didn't react quickly enough. Took Bojan off, who is the one player in the side who can control the game, keep possession. And slowly but surely, Leicester started to gain some control, gaining confidence. Ranieri made two attacking substitutions with pace, which is what we should have done. We should have gone at them more. They obviously got the goal back. And as a Stoke fan, everyone, I think 26,000 fans in the stadium knew what was coming. Again, Hughes didn't react. And sure enough, Leicester got the equaliser that they deserved in the second half. And I think, another 5 or 10 minutes playing, I think Leicester would have probably gone on to win the game, because Stoke just really were not at it. And it was really disappointing, because obviously off the back of the draw in midweek, which was on kind of the opposite, really. You know, we were putting in a gritty performance, playing 70 minutes with 10 men. It felt like a win to get a point. And this was a point that should have been a win and felt like a defeat. So disappointing, really disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, as a Liverpool fan who watched your side somehow lose to Bournemouth a couple of weeks ago, I can tell you how it feels to obviously see a game where you're so clear that it's going to slip away from you. And you can just see it, and it's horrible. So at the very least, I guess, you, as you said, if you played for 5 or 10 minutes longer, maybe you would have lost the game. But thankfully, it was just a draw. Do you have any reasons why you think Mark Hughes didn't act?
I'm not sure. I think one of the baffling things from Hughes in his reign as Stoke manager, and I don't know whether this is in his previous roles, but substitution-wise seems very... a lot of Stoke fans don't agree with his substitutions. So I'm not quite sure why. He came out in the local press and acknowledged what he saw was happening. He saw that we were tired from Wednesday. So he's come out saying all the things you would expect him to say, but then not back that up with what actually transpired on the pitch. You know, we had options on the bench. We had Shaqiri, who could have come on. We had an Egyptian winger, Ramadan Sobhi, again, who could come on. So very, very peculiar state of affairs that happened on Saturday, and hopefully he's learned from his mistakes and he won't repeat them in games to come.
No, sure, yeah. I think sometimes you sort of allow managers to have that sort of baffling game where, despite their better judgment, they just don't change it. Whether it's faith in the team to be able to turn it around, faith in certain players that they can handle it, they can find their way out of a situation, and it just doesn't happen. Especially given how Leicester have been playing recently as well, I think that maybe it was the red card, maybe it was just the sense of injustice that sort of pushed them on in that game itself, that us against their mentality. Just before we have to come back to talk about Mark Hughes actually and how he's doing, but the summer business, I want to come on to that because, of course, one name that Liverpool fans are very familiar with, wee Joe Allen, Welsh Chavy, plenty of other names, Wad Perlo, all these affectionate names to gained a little bit of a cult hero status by
Jesus.
There's Yarrow. Yarrow's not missing him, but I'm trying to ask you, Adam, how Joe Allen has done since he's arrived at the club, and also just talk about maybe the summer window as a whole and what you thought of the players that did come in.
Yeah, I've personally been really impressed with Joe Allen. I think he's been a great bit of business for Stoke. He's been a great addition. He's brought energy to the side. Obviously, his Hughes thought he would tried him as a number 10, which I think surprised quite a few people. And he paid dividends for a short space of time. I think he scored 3. He's created, but I think it's also meant that we don't necessarily know what our best midfield is. So I think the fact that he came thought he was being signed as a defensive midfielder, which I think is the position he was playing with Liverpool, and in fact was Liverpool's best player on the pitch at the Britannia in the League Cup semi-final as the holding midfielder. It's kind of been the downfall of players like Bojan, because Bojan's not been able to get into the side as a result. I personally would like to see Allen sit, Bojan be the creative force, and let Mbula be the driving midfielder that he can be. We haven't seen that really, so I hope that's something that Hughes might look at in the future. But you know, he has been for 13 million. I don't think we can argue. I think he's going to be a great acquisition. Some of the other players, Boney, we needed a striker. We were desperate. We've been desperate for desperate since we sold Mark Steen to Chelsea, I think, and Peter Thorne to Cardiff years and years ago. We just can't seem to find a striker for love nor money. Boney, we thought, might have been the answer. It's not worked out. He scored two goals, both against Swansea. I think a couple of factors on that one. I don't think he's match fit. I question his desire, his appetite. But I don't also think, in his defence, we played to his strengths. When he's been dropped for the last few games, we then start putting a load of crosses into the box. I think we attempted 33 crosses on Saturday, which for Boney would have been bread and butter for him. So I feel a little bit sorry for him. It's not quite worked out. I don't think he'll be here in January. I think he'll move on, which then leaves, you know, a gap again. We need to find someone else. Martins Indy, centre-half, on loan from Porto. Been fantastic. Really rate him. Very calm, very assured, composed on the ball. Likes a tackle, gets stuck in, can pass. He's kind of one of those all-round, natural, good central defenders in my eyes. Can do a bit of everything. Good foil for Shawcross. Adds a bit of balance to the back four. So I've been really impressed with him. We're looking to tie him down in January. So I'm hoping that that deal will be done. And then Lee Grant, which again, surprised everybody. We needed a keeper. I think Shea Given has had his day, unfortunately. He was poor at the start of the season. Grant's come in, been fantastic. 5 clean sheets. Statistically, best goalkeeper in the Premier League in terms of saves. You know, shot to save ratios and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, one obvious mistake he made on Saturday, but other than that, he's been very good. He was outstanding at Old Trafford against United, kept in the game. So he's been a kind of positive shining light in an otherwise bit of a haphazard season, really, a bit disappointing.
Yeah, I do. I remember his performance at Old Trafford. It was great just to see some of the sort of camera pans to Mourinho, just looking in the stands in absolute awe that this guy is pulling out some of these saves. With Boney there, I mean, I don't think it's much surprise. I think City fans were never not too happy with him. I think since he's moved from Swansea, and that's never seemed to have picked up that level of form again. Alan, though, it's interesting what you say actually about him taking up that more advanced role, something that he never really was afforded at Liverpool, I guess, until at stages when Klopp first arrived, I guess, because I think Klopp never really sort of fancied Alan's physicality in the midfield, but that's not really a problem for you with, you know, with the likes of Mbula being next to him. But yeah, I think Bojan, it's almost incredible to hear that he can't get in the team at the moment, considering you think of his form a couple of seasons ago and his undoubted, you know, sort of ability. So pretty interesting there. And Bruno Martins Indy as well. I'm not sure. I really, that came out of nowhere to me, but I thought that was a really, really big signing, to be honest. But do you think those sort of signings that you had with Grant as well, was that all the key positions sort of addressed, or do you think there is an area of the team where you're still a little bit, you'd like to reinforce? Is it strikers?
I think it's got to be that striking department. You know, Crouch, you know, is our striker sitting on the bench. You
he's
know,
keen he's, to get he's again. He's keen to get
yeah,
again.
Yeah, he is. You know, I wouldn't be too surprised if he moved on in January, unfortunately. I think Sunderland are rumoured to be interested to link up again with Defoe, which would be interesting. Jonathan Walters, obviously leading the line. You know, he's been a fantastic servant to the club, Walters. You know, coming back to his old stomping ground at Liverpool, you know, this week. But he can't go on forever. And Manju, for all his work rate, his ethic, he's not really fancied as a striker anymore. So we really are short up front. But I think Hughes has been teetering with a back three, so kind of, you know, this new fancied, unfancied, new formation that seems to be hitting the Premier League. It's kind of evolved again with kind of four across the midfield, wing backs. We're really struggling left side, I think. You know, we've got Eric Peters. he's steady, but he doesn't pull up any trees. Attacking wise, he's really poor. He's quite limited. So for me, we need to strengthen in attack. If we're going to persevere with the wing backs, then we need a left wing back. Depending on where Alan fits into the midfield, we need a holding midfield player. So Glenn Whelan is still kind of, you know, being persevered with in there. Not my favourite player anymore. I'd like to see him replaced with a really good, you know, kind of defensive holding midfield player that allows our flair players to kind of get on the ball and do what they can do. So, you know, three key areas for me, I think we still need to strengthen.
Sure. And you mentioned that it's been a bit of a mess season so far, a bit haphazard, a bit. What do you sort of put that down to? I mean, is it Mark Hughes himself? We're going to come on to talk to him. He's passed 400 games now, I think, is it, as a Stoke manager. So I was going to come on to ask you what sort of constitutes success for Mark Hughes at this point, I guess. But why has it been sort of an uneven start, in your opinion?
We're fashionably slow starters to the Premier League, and we finished well. I'm not quite sure why that is, but that seems to be the trend that we follow. And again, we didn't pick up our first win until the middle of October. This calendar year, we've only won 11 games in the whole year, which is quite poor, really. Some of our key players, so Arnautovic was fantastic last season, hasn't really kicked into gear, obviously suspended for a further two games. Shaqiri again, you know, we're still kind of waiting. When is he, you know, going to really get going for Stoke? He'll put a couple of good performances in, he'll get injured, that'll slow him down, he'll then come back, and it's a kind of repeating circle with him. Obviously, the striking option doesn't help. You know, if we haven't got a striker scoring goals, you know, we've stumbled in to Joe Allen scoring five goals for us. I think he's leading scorer, I think.
Prolific.
I think he'd only scored four, and he's in the whole of his career before this season. So I think it's a culmination of a few different factors, really. Performance-wise, we've not really had any standout moments this season yet. You know, the wins have come against the teams that we would fancy beating. We've also picked up draws against some of those teams as well. We haven't had any. Each season, we seem to have at least two or three real key memorable games. I'm hoping they're still to come. Starting on the 27th, it'd be nice.
No.
where we beat, you know, I mean, I think last season we turned over City and United at home comfortably. Arsenal, we always seem to do well against at home, but we're not seeing any of those memorable games, none of those memorable performances. So, you know, you asked me to pick out a key performance this season. I can't give you one because. There hasn't really been too much as a Stoke fan to shout about this season as yet.
In terms of Shaqiri, I mean, how's he been playing this season for you? You know, obviously a lot of hype around him and his talent when he first joined, but you've said no one's really stood out individually and there's been no standout performances, but is he sort of really living up to the bill, or do you think that, you know, the way you're playing isn't helping him, or is he just not performing?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of all those. Personally, for me, Shaqiri's best position is as a floating number 10. I think that's where he picks up. He picks up great positions as in that role. You know, his best games for Switzerland seem to be. He just gives license to roam. I think in some of the games where Hughes plays him out wide on the right, I think he's too structured. He's not given enough freedom. He's expected to get up and down. Probably not his game, really. You know, he's more of a threat going forward. I don't think he wants to do any of the donkey work. In the games where he has been given a bit more license, where we've maybe evolved tactically, his performances have got better. He produced a great performance away at Hull, scoring two goals, two fantastic strikes, which is what he's capable of doing. I still would like to see a bit more freedom for Arnautovic, Shaqiri, Burian. You know, I think about Liverpool's front three, and I'm not saying there's comparisons in terms of ability, but you look at the freedom that Mane, Firmino, Origi, or you know Coutinho, whichever one of those are there, and there's no one of those in any fixed position, if you like. I think Burian, Shaqiri, Arnautovic have got the ability. You know, the best performances we've seen as Stoke fans over the last few years has been actually when we've played the false number nine, and they were against City United, where they were just given license. And I think one of the problems we've got is we haven't got a disciplined three behind them, which allows them to do that, which I think is when Hughes goes a bit more structured. And that kind of starves the creativity, I suppose, of those three.
Yeah, so, I mean, you mentioned Hughes there and sort of the tactics that he's employing that perhaps starve some creativity in the team. But at this stage, now that he has sort of passed 400 games as Stoke manager, and you know, new players have come in with a different sort of technical profile than you'd be used to. You know, they're talented on the ball. They can be very creative, like you mentioned. What sort of constitutes success for him now? I mean, are Stoke fans looking at him and thinking, you know, what's next? How are you going to develop us, you know, from the stage that he did when he arrived at the club? And I mean, how well do Stoke fans think he has done so far?
Well, I think the majority of fans are still happy and they're still behind. You know, Saturday's game put some of those things into question. There weren't really people calling for his head, but there are a few, me included, having said that, you know, if there was change, would we be that bothered? I'm not 100% certain I would be that bothered if there was change. But I'm certainly not an advocate for getting him sacked. I think we're quite realistic as Stoke fans. I like to think, you know, we finished ninth the last three seasons. Realistically, in the league, are we any higher than ninth? You know, I would say no. I would say our ceiling is probably eighth or ninth. We're always in a kind of mini league there with teams like Southampton, West Ham, who I know are not performing well this season. But, you know, you've got your six at the top who, you know, deservedly are at the top. You've then perhaps, you know, got Everton underneath that as a club. So really our ceiling for me is eighth or ninth. And then what we want is a cup run. Now we flaked, we limped out of the League Cup this year after doing really well last year. So hopefully we can kickstart and have an FA Cup run. So we've got Wolves at home in the third round, winnable tie. So for me, constituting success is obviously maintaining stability in the league, beating some of those, putting in some good performances against those the bigger teams. We know we're not going to win every game. We can't win every game. But, you know, we'd like some standout moments across the season and a decent cup run. Ultimately, though, we are investing heavily in the squad. You know, Mbula, 18 million, Shaqiri, 12, Allen, 12. You know, so with that comes, I suppose, a little bit more expectation. So the bar gets higher each season, but we need to kind of maintain our position as others kind of invest around us as well. You know, the gap's closing between the Premier League, and year on year, it's harder to maintain that. That position, I think.
No, I certainly think so. I mean, as you say, it's sort of a strange thing because there's not necessarily a big problem going on. I guess it's just that question of, you know, the ambition at this stage, but also where can Mark Hughes realistically take it at this stage? You mentioned those players who've come in, big, talented players who really should develop and you'd like to think, I mean, Mbula especially, he's one who's always really excited me. When he moved to Stoke, I was like, I wonder how he'll develop in the Premier League. Seems well suited to it, you'd imagine. He's that sort of physical, sort of dynamic player. But yeah, it's sort of a strange situation you find yourselves in because you're not unhappy with the, you know, finishing around ninth or eighth in the Premier League and perhaps pushing for a Europa League spot would be good. I mean, you mentioned that run a couple of years ago. Interesting, Alexi, just to bring you in before we go on to all things Liverpool, for a club in Stoke's position like right now, you know, with the success that Mark Hughes has had, where do you think is next for them? I mean, in your opinion,
I in a way agree with Adam there, because I think you know, expecting Stoke City, with all due respect, you know, mounting a serious top four or a title challenge at this point, it would be maybe a little bit more over expecting things from them. But somewhere within the top 10 would be a really sort of, you know, good outcome for the club, and a serious cup run like last year that you guys had. I think that would be also a considerable success for Mark Hughes. I mean, you know, it's really hard to deny that Stoke City right now is, first of all, a different beast to what it was under Tony Pulis. Secondly, it's to a certain extent a team in transition, which can attract moderately big names like Shaqiri, like Imbula, you know. But it just has to get to the next level. And I think this season the team, the Stoke City team, can do that if it finishes in top 10 and has a good cup run. Maybe next season it may take itself to the next level. Right now, I don't think I would agree with Adam there that, you know, it's pretty much on the same level of expectations.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see sort of like if you compare them to a club like Southampton, who very much, you know, the vogue sort of, you know, look at their academy, look at their development, look at the way the managers come in, everything just keeps going, etc.
You know, Harry, Southampton would probably have been in a better place if we hadn't bought almost all of their best players, right?
I can't remember the last player that we signed from Southampton. No, of course, yeah, yes, we haven't quite raided Stoke in the way that we seem to pillage Southampton, which is a bit embarrassing, but also they're great players. But yeah, I think it'd be interesting. I wonder if we'll see sort of similar ilk of managers coming in and being talked about in line with the Stoke job. I remember once I heard this rumor about Bielsa and Stoke, but I've never really been able to let that one go. I sort of really want that to happen at some stage, even though it doesn't seem to end well for Bielsa teams. But anyway, Adam, thanks so much for, you know, proving that on Stoke. It's really interesting to see where Mark Hughes is taking it. You think of the number of players there who are so talented now. Hasn't quite taken off for you so far, but I'm really hoping it doesn't take off for you on the 27th. Whenever you play Chelsea, are you due to play Chelsea later in the season? When's the Chelsea
next game?
Next game. Oh, you're after us, of course. Perfect. Yeah, so if you can just hold off on the 27th, and I'm sure me and Alexi will speak about that in a second. But yeah, hold off for that, and then just turn up for Chelsea and Diego Costa.
The festive period's not been kind to us. Liverpool and Chelsea away.
How Chelsea, they're easy. You can easily bat them. Not leaking goals. Speaking all things Liverpool now, joined by, I realised I've been referring to, I've been calling you Alexei, calling you Yaro. I'm just switching between both of them. But welcome you in, Alexei.
Both work.
Both work. And we're going to be talking about Liverpool, and there's a small little blip of, you know, potential doom and gloom, panicking a couple of games ago when you look at the Bournemouth defeat and then that sort of lackluster performance against West Ham at home. But, yeah, the strong, really resounding win against Middlesbrough. And then I think this was a ugly contest, not really one for us to establish ourselves and the attackers to really show what they can do. But as we talked about, you know, Sadio Mane, your stoppage time winner, the perfect early Christmas present for Reds, or at least the red half of Merseyside, at least. But you know, we're guaranteed to spend Christmas, you know, sitting second in the league, and yeah, albeit 6 points behind Chelsea at the moment, but I'm sure Klopp's got his eyes set on just, you know, keeping up with them. And should they stumble, which of course, as we discussed, they will stumble against Stoke, you know, we're there to pounce. So what I want to ask you first and foremost is a few words on the Everton game, and maybe talk about the performance versus the result, I guess.
Well, I nearly smashed things around in my office when that goal went in, because it was so tense, it was so unpredictable. It could have gone either way, as it often has in the Merseyside derbies. And, you know, having this kind of result, And I have to mention here that I have no, you know, animosity or hate or anything very negative towards Everton or their fans, unlike some of us. I mean, I don't see them as you know, as rivals or something like that.
He says differently off the pods, guys. Trust me.
No, I never said that. I have my footballing enemies, but Everton is somewhere like maybe top five, not even top three. Wow. But anyway, I'm maybe a little bit against the traditions and mainstream in that respect, but still winning in the 94th minute, you such a beautiful goal. And, you know, it's such a great delight when everybody, basically the whole Twitter, is begging for Sturridge to come on. He comes on and he creates that goal. And, you know, saying that it was his and only his goal is completely incorrect, because the pace on Sadio Mane for the follow-up was absolutely incredible. And, you know, it went in 94th minute. And, you know, winning in the 94th minute is... it doesn't get sweeter than this. I tweeted about this yesterday, because that's the sweetest kind of win you can get after such a tense encounter. And we could see in that game how different Everton has become. Because if we remember the last game we had against Everton, the season before, Klopp's first half season in the club, where we absolutely demolished them, just destroyed and humiliated them. This was a completely different kind of game. And they could have been far ahead in the first half if they had been more lucky in front of goal. But you were mentioning the performance versus the result. The result matters more than the performance in this particular case. I wasn't really happy with everything we did in the pitch. Obviously, Klopp did some wondrous talk in the locker room at halftime, and players came out for the second half completely, you know, with a different mentality, with a different set, and with a different approach to the game, and that worked eventually. It's the best possible Christmas present from the Reds. It could have been only better if we hammered them 6-0, of course. But again, 94th minute goal, which was very pleasurable. But again, there are very many questions about that performance. Not only that performance, but a lot of other performances we've had over the past month or so. Not necessarily, you know, negative questions, but questions which definitely should be addressed. But I guess we'll get to that at a later stage in our conversation.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because, of course, as you say, 94th minute winner, regardless of who it's with, and especially in a derby match, you're going to forget most of everything else, at least for, you know, a few hours, although it did seem Twitter forgot it for maybe a couple of hours, and then back to the infighting that we're so used to seeing, and my God. But yeah, it's a fantastic goal. I think you mentioned as well that you're sort of scrappy, but and people crediting it to Daniel Sturridge. And I do think he had a big impact when he came on. But Mane, yeah, that sheer speed off, because he did stop. He was watching the shot, and then just as it hit the post, you could see he was off and got there lightning quick. But I thought Neville actually made a good point in the analysis when he was talking about the fact that Firmino was on the other side, more or less at exactly the same angle. So had the ball rebounded outwards, to, you know, the other direction, he was there for the tap-in as well. So really interesting to see that they're still switched on that late in the game. Everton, I think what you talk about there is really interesting, because when we played them last season, John Stones, who's still making those same mistakes now, yet sort of not really having the awareness around himself, but just passing the ball for the sake of it, those tactics sort of played into our hands. We cut them to ribbons, but under Koeman, going more direct, trying to use Lukaku, didn't quite work. You know, Clavan, your man, and Dejan Lovren as well. Two big performances there, I thought. So to move on to those guys and talk about them, I think Dejan Lovren's always somebody who seems to inspire, you know, two reactions amongst the fan base. Either he is the worst thing to ever happen to football, let alone defence and Liverpool, or he's improved, and he's this now a player who's justifying that FIFA sum. But Klavan as well, he had a big performance in the game as well. But I want to talk to you and just ask you what you thought of both of their performances during the game, and this could be the partnership for the next one if Matip's not back. Would you be comfortable with that?
Well, just to answer the latter part of your question, yes, if Matip is not available, I'll be totally satisfied with this kind of partnership, because the only other option we would have is Lovren with Lucas or Klavan with Lucas, and both of those would not work. Anything involving Lucas as a centre-back is a failed strategy, especially against a considerable and quite potent strike force which Stoke City possesses. But yeah, they both had a really good performance. I've not really been on the positive side of Lovren as of late. We made this argument after this horrendous game against Bournemouth that Lovren can do the basics of defending. He can be a solid defender, not spectacular, not world class, not you know, top level defender, but only if he's playing next to a very, very strong defender. So when he plays next to Matip, a lot of things that he's wrong for, that his inconsistencies, they are washed away by how good Matip is. And even when Matip makes a mistake, like it happened against West Ham, you know, everybody makes mistakes. There's not a single faultless defender in the world. Lovren is not there to cover for him anyway. So I can't say I'm you know, on the good side of Lovren these days. I think fundamentally we need an upgrade on his position. And bearing in mind that probably, again, it might be a little bit of a speculation, but it seems to be the case that Klopp's initial plan was to have Joel Matip next to Mamadou Sakho at the back. And then again, we don't know what happened to Sakho and why he's been, you know, outcasted from the team. I think Lovren Matip was sort of an emergency way, and Klavan was another backup option to have. But at this point, considering how good Klavan was against Everton, and, you know, Everton may not be world beaters at this particular moment in time, yet they won against Arsenal just a week before. And they also have Romelu Lukaku, who is one of the best strikers around, regardless of what people may think of him. He's got his own style and he's got bags of ability. And Klavan kept him in his pocket for the whole duration of the game. I saw the stats on Klavan yesterday. I think he won 8 tackles and made 3 blocks and 7 interceptions and 100% of his tackles. Some 86 or 88% passing, if I'm not wrong. And I only remember like one instance where he actually lost a one-on-one versus a player that was Lukaku, where he headed way, way, way above the goal. Only other cases he won comfortably. He made Lukaku play deeper than he was supposed to play. And largely due to Klavan, not Lovren, the goal threat from Everton was nullified in the second half. And if you go back to the game against Middlesbrough, I mean, they did not really create a lot of dangerous opportunities on our goal at the time during that game. But still, Klavan was not letting anything through. The thing about Klavan is he himself understands. And if you remember, Harry, I followed Liverpool during the tour in the United States this summer, and I interviewed Ragnar Klavan in person. He told me then off camera that he never expected to be a first-team starter. He knows the competition is very strong, and he was purchased for Liverpool as a backup option. But right now, it's just the time when we need a backup option, and he's more than up for the task. You can't expect him to play 35 or 50 or 40 games a season. He may only be available for 15 to 20 games at best, you know, including the cup games. But as we've seen against Everton, he's the guy who can be called upon. And Liverpool Echo even awarded him, I think it was 8.1, which was higher than Sadio Mane, who was Liverpool's LFC's accounts man of the match yesterday in the derby. So Klavan's performance spoke volumes, and if that is the choice for the game against Stoke, then I'll be perfectly happy with that. If it's Ragnar Lovren, then yeah, sure, let's do it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that I do agree to an extent on the way in which Lovren performs when he's alongside a calmer, maybe more authoritative centre-back. I think it's been showcased with Saka, it's been showcased with Matip, and then to a degree with Klavan as well. I know there's plenty who will say that, you know, Lovren's been the best centre-back at the club for a while now, and he has been first-choice starter for a while, but I just think that you can still see that those moments are there, as are there for many defenders, but I think you can see talented footballer, perhaps not always the best defender, and those errors we've already seen quite a few of them this season. I think people seem to forget them because we win, and it's sort of, yeah, the worst possible thing you can do is dare to analyse a game that you've won, despite the fact that that's what we pay Jurgen Klopp to do. But anyway, so,
and you know, there are cases like his blunder against Crystal Palace.
Oh, yeah. Out of nowhere.
Where, you know, he's not really at fault for that. I mean, he may have been, you know, in the wrong position and too slow. But yeah, it's a blunder. It happens to everyone. Mm. You know, almost the same thing happened to Matip in the West Ham game.
Yes.
Not the same thing, but it was close to that. But there are things which are fundamentally wrong about his positioning, which are, you know, not always that he goes into a tackle, he wins it, you know, things like that. So if he plays next to a world-class defender or centre-back or rather a top centre-back like Matip, he would be just fine if he has the cover. But when he's all alone out there, it's not the most reliable guy ever.
Mm. And one touch on Daniel Sturridge, because he's been away for a while. Had that spell on the sidelines when, of course, all those narratives around him being weak, mentally weak, etc., come back. But he had that spell on the sidelines. He came back in there for a very brief cameo towards the end, but sort of had exactly the impact we would have hoped, albeit not scoring the goal himself. But, I mean, he's a real luxury option to have, to be able to bring off the bench. I guess that those things are really important if you're going to go for a title charge and you want to maintain that. Would you start him in any of these upcoming games, Stoke or City, to look a little bit ahead over the festive season? Or do you think his fate for the rest of the season is to be a sub?
Well, that's a good question. You know, with Daniel Sturridge, I think you gave a very good comparison, like a luxury option to have. It's almost like you're driving Lamborghinis and Bentleys all days of the week, and you still have that wonderful Ferrari in your garage, saved for a weekend. I mean, yeah, Sturridge is this kind of player. He is a luxury to have in many ways. There have been a lot of questions whether he is the right fit for the starting 11 with Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, which I think we've seen ample evidence that he's not. Because, I mean, if he was, he would have started every game when he was not injured before that latest injury, which he just recovered from. He was still more or less a substitute, or even if he started, he would be substituted during the game. So it's hard to see that he's a first-choice striker right now. But on the other hand, we are not exactly 100% fit right now in terms of our injuries, most important of which obviously being Philippe Coutinho. So there are options that Klopp can use up front. And obviously since Sturridge had been injured for quite some time and only came back for the derby, we used Divock Origi. Yeah, he scored 5 goals in 6 games, which is incredible, you know, considering his age, considering that it's only his roughly second season in the league. Against Everton, I don't think Origi was at the top of his game. It's really hard to see what exactly went wrong for him, because technically, the way Everton played, Origi could have played to his strengths, but it just wasn't his day. I think he had a day off or something, for whatever reason that is. And we've been, you know, of all the podcasts we've done as of late, you know, when the season began, we've always been talking about how Klopp now has options for a particular opposition. I would probably not start Daniel Sturridge against Stoke City, but I would probably start him against Manchester City. You know, again, depending on the type of opposition and the type of defense that you're facing, because in the case of Stoke, we'll have a strong defense. We'll have a very physical presence. Ryan Shawcross has been there for ages, and you know, he's there from the Tony Pulis times, and he's all about physicality and raw strength, power. I'm not exactly sure that Daniel Sturridge would be the best option for that. But on the other hand, Ryan Shawcross has some speed in him, unlike, you know, many of the Stoke defenders, centre-backs of the past, like Robert Huth, for instance, who has never been a speedy one. And maybe, you know, if Sturridge starts and tries to outpace him, that might be one of the options, because Shawcross always, you know, thinks that he has a strength, he has a speed, has both oblique qualities. Maybe Sturridge can exploit that. But to my mind, I would probably go with unchanged, formation when it comes to Sturridge or Origi up front, and then bring Sturridge on, because we've seen how it works against tiring defenses. It was beautiful.
No, it certainly was. I thought you could see that there are still elements of rust, as you'd expect there to be. You know, passing not quite there, touch not quite there, but you can't really expect anything more, I think, considering the lack of game time he's had. It's just a shame, because look at that cameo he did have against Watford, where he should have scored a hat trick. It'll be interesting to see how he's used during this period, where there's a real lack of ability to rotate in general. Although I don't think Klopp likes to rotate too much, but it'll be interesting to see if he's used. And then throughout the season as well, I think it'll be eye-opening to see whether he does come in for certain stages. But I think he's absolutely key. Or that sort of player is absolutely key to sustaining a title charge if we do find ourselves up at the top of the table towards the end of the season. Just to pick up on something else I was thinking about, you mentioned Origi not doing too well there, and I actually thought it was only when Firmino switched to the centre that we started getting quite a bit more joy. He was involved with lots, and he's had a bit of a tough time out there on the left recently, but Origi's been scoring the goal, so no need to move it around. But just, I mean, we heard Adam talking about strikers and options, and with Mane, who scored the winner, leaving for the African Cup of Nations, January approaching us now. I mean, do you think we need to spend in order to maintain this title charge, if that's what it is? And do you expect the club to make a change?
Well, my belief is that we, by the time the January transfer window opens, we'll obviously be exactly halfway through the season, 19 games, right? And at that point, it will be clear whether we're up there or close to being up there. Again, if Chelsea drops points in either of the two games, and let's say we hypothetically win them both, including the game against Manchester City, we could be, a point or two away from the top spot by midway through the season. So, yeah, I do absolutely think we need to spend in January, considering that we spent nothing in summer, right? Our net budget wasn't affected at all. I mean, it was negative spend, right? If we are there running for the title, we should go for a top center back, who would be a partner either to Matip or, or Lovren for that matter. But we absolutely need a top center back, a first choice center back, a person who would immediately go into the team. And Mane's absence will be very, very felt. As we've been discussing this on Twitter a lot, I think Dave Hendrick put it best of all, pundits out there, that Mane has basically almost disappeared in November. Not that he wasn't useful, not that he didn't make his pace, but he wasn't as efficient as he was in August, September, October, and now December. But he is instrumental. He's absolutely instrumental to the way we're playing right now, to all our results and successes. And having him gone for almost... that will be almost 3 weeks, right? In January, the time when you still cannot afford to lose points. So we'll definitely need someone there, someone in that department, whether it's an up and coming project like Pulisic or Quincy Promes from Spartak Moscow, which I know it's quite a surreal link, but you never know what happens in the world of football. Anyone of that ilk, with pace, with determination, with the footballing brain as Mane has, that would be absolutely necessary for us if we want to, if we are still there in the title charge. But you said it right. With players like Sturridge and Origi available as options, that's always good options to have. The only difference here is whether those options would be enough for us to, have a top four fight or a title fight. That is the only big difference that I see here.
Mm. Yeah, I think that you, as well as that whether a player comes in or not, it could be perhaps a situation where we use some youth players, a bit Ojo, and if he gets back to fitness, and whether he'll be in Klopp's thinking. I know he seems to have started this sort of rehab program back in matches fairly well. He seems to be scoring freely as he was prior to his injury. But I think it'll be interesting to see whether he comes in or whether anyone else gets a chance. Just to move on to the weekend's game then, not the weekend's game, but the game against Stoke, and maybe talk about what our, you know, the key threats are on both sides. I mean, Adam, you mentioned Liverpool's front three, and we're missing Coutinho. But I mean, from what you've seen this season of Liverpool, is there a particular player that you think that perhaps you might struggle against, given your back four currently, or is it more the pressing style that's got you a little anxious?
Yeah, I suppose that will that'll be interesting to see how Stoke can cope with that, particularly with the game being at Anfield. You know, Liverpool, you would think would start quite intense. They'll go at Stoke early on, and I think it's how Stoke can weather that storm for the first 20 minutes in the game. I think if we can come through the first 20, 25 minutes relatively unscathed, Stoke will grow into the game. I think our style is suited to depending on the team we put out, of course, to a more counter attacking style. So you know if we can keep the ball better than we have done the last few games, then we've got every chance. But you know, those front three with their movement is obviously a cause for concern, whichever three start. I actually think Sturridge might start just, you know, three games in 6 days, I think. You know, the next game to come against Man City, which Klopp will obviously want to be getting a result out of that one. So it appears that he fancies Origi more than Sturridge at this moment in time. I think against Stoke, you know, either or, you know, is useful to have for Liverpool, which makes me think he may rest Origi for the City game if Origi is his first choice. So yeah, you know, the pressing is obviously you know, the in thing. So you know, let's see how Stoke can shape up against that.
And do you think that there's particular attackers that you've got, or there are ways in which you can hurt us based on what you've seen? I mean, there are some frailties at the back, like we've alluded to.
Yeah, I mean, in previous seasons, I think in the League Cup game at Anfield that we won, we went a bit more direct. We mixed it up a little bit. We got the option of Walters. We got the option of Crouch. So, Charlie Adam might come back into the side potentially. You know, Charlie Adam likes as you will all know as Liverpool fans, he likes the diagonal ball. You know, Walters is very powerful. He's a very good physical presence up front. We could look to him. What does that? What inhibits us then is pace moving forward. I'd be surprised if Shaqiri didn't play. We may see Shaqiri and Diouf on either side for pace. So it may be a front three of Diouf, Shaqiri and Walters. So we've got a bit of physical presence at the back, but we've also got some pace if we need to hit you on the counter-attack. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how we shape up. It's very difficult to second guess Mark Hughes at the moment in terms of what he's likely to do. So yeah, your guess is probably as good as mine at this stage, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. And Yara, I mean, do you think we'll approach this as we have done our previous games at Anfield? Just look to scoring early is a massive relief for the team, regardless of how well they're playing. But do you think, given Stoke's threats, that we might change the way we approach it, or do you think it's just going to be very much in line with what we've seen?
Well, I think there might be some changes in midfield. Namely, I think Chan may be introduced in the starting lineup. Whether that would be, instead of Gini Wijnaldum or Lallana, for that matter, or Wijnaldum goes further up the pitch, it remains to be seen. But I think Chan would be a good option to have in this particular game, primarily because of his physicality and his the way he can control and force in that part of the pitch, just in case Stoke goes on counter-attacking scheme, which could be the case since they're going away to Anfield, and only a few teams like Jose Mourinho's Man United can come to Anfield and place 8 defenders in their box and to not even bother with counter-attacking. But even they did. They tried to counter-attack having 8 men at the back. I don't think this is going to be the case with Stoke. I think it's a much more fluid formation that Mark Hughes has been using, at least for the past 5-6 games that I've analyzed and researched. It's a 4-2-3-1, so it gives a lot of versatility in each line, and I think we have to counter that. So I think our midfield has to be stronger, and it definitely has to be stronger than it was against Everton. There's been a lot of conflicting opinions on Twitter about how Jordan Henderson and Gini Wijnaldum played in yesterday's in the derby in the game against Everton. I would summarize saying that they were both good and bad. And we've had very nasty moments in midfield when it was almost non-existent, especially if you're watching a game of this caliber of, a Merseyside derby where it's always intense and it's always almost like, a massacre in the middle of the pitch. This time it was somewhat non-existent, so we will need that kind of presence against Stoke City. As for the back line, we've discussed it, the centre-backs I would keep the same. Obviously, the wing-backs, yeah, definitely. I don't see any change in that. Well, maybe Moreno for Milner. That's debatable, considering that we have a lot of games coming up. But front three, that's an interesting question indeed. I think it will be very important to exploit one weakness in the Stoke City backline, which I obviously see as a weakness. That is our former man, Glenn Johnson. I think we need to throw all the pace we have at him, because we know him too well. He played for us for so many seasons, and he left us for a good reason. And I think outpacing him would be very, very crucial for our forward line. But other than that, I would more or less stick to the same formation and the same plan that we used against Everton. Maybe only against solidifying the midfield, because this is something that was pretty eye-catching throughout the game, how some of the frailties in the mid were exposed by Everton, especially in the first half, much less in the second half.
Yeah, I thought you saw quite a few times Henderson switching off, not tracking Barkley, things like that. But in terms of a change that I guess would be talked about, but we probably won't see it till the new year now, but you'd expect Mignolet to start both the next games?
Oh, that's such a painful question. You see, it's just unbelievable that we reached this point. I mean, this whole Karius debate is a different subject for maybe a 2-hour long rant, a podcast. I don't know. Maybe it's already happened. I've not tracked it. But in any case, this is just painful to watch how Karius has been shut down. And the most ridiculous thing, I'm not having anything against Mignolet at this moment, because I think he's a good keeper, but the same fans have been slating the hell out of Mignolet for a very, very long time, saying that he's unfit for this position and we need a better keeper, are now saying, like, get back Mignolet because Karius is horrible. Well, Karius is not horrible. He's just learning on the job and things like that. But I don't know, Harry. It's honestly a very difficult question. People who have very credible arguments right now, but look, we got Mignolet back into the frame and we've had 2 clean sheets, consecutive clean sheets. Well, in both of those clean sheets, they've not really been tested, let's be honest. I mean, there wasn't really a major save from Mignolet in either of those games. So I don't know. It's very tough. I would probably reinstate Karius at some point. But I'm struggling to understand and even more so to comment on the point that Klopp is trying to make right now by, you know, switching back to Mignolet. It's beyond my comprehension. I don't really understand what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he couldn't have picked two better games for it, really, considering the lack of sort of threat that both teams opposed Mignolet. I agree with what you said. He's not really done that much. He's been solid. He's been a bit proactive in his distribution. He's, you know, kicked the ball a long way, which is always nice for a goalkeeper. But I think he's been fine. But with Karius, I think it's going to be. I think you'll probably see him reinstated in January, and I think this whole being dropped situation has just mostly come about purely because Klopp is a bit appalled, really, with the treatment the kid's got in the media, and maybe just Buvac relentless sessions. Almost, well, it's Achtenberger. Oh well. Let's hope Karius comes back stronger for it, and it's probably going to be in the new year. But I wouldn't change him for this game. Okay then, guys. I think, you know, we come to predictions now and see what we're expecting. We'll all probably be looking forward to this festive game. So, Adam, I mean, do you think the best you can get out of this is a draw, given that it's away from home, or do you think you can maybe nick something more?
Well, I think away from home in the Premier League, a draw is normally a good result, and I think any Stoke fan now would take a draw. We do take comfort in obviously the last, I think it was the last time we were at Anfield, we won the game. So, you know, that was the first time in many years, I think, that we'd managed to get a result at Anfield. So, you know, there was always at the back of the mind, there's a chance Liverpool are playing really well. You know, perhaps stuttered to a win at Everton, played well against Middlesbrough, and you know, they've not been firing on all cylinders as maybe they had at the start of the season. So, you know, we've got to go thinking that we can win the game. But you know, I would take a draw. Sadly, I guess we will probably lose the game, and I would probably go for if I was having to make a prediction on I would probably say it will end up being, you know, maybe 2-0 to Liverpool.
And Yaro, I mean, do you think you see Stoke being more aggressive, I'd say, than Middlesbrough and Everton were?
Well, as I've said earlier, I think Stoke City is a much different beast right now, even to what it was last season. And last season, we actually played pretty well against them. And let's not forget, Stoke City has been a banana slip for Liverpool for a very long time. If we go back to the 8-9 season, the first season of Stoke City after being reinstated to the Prem, when we nearly won the title, remember what happened then? Two goalless draws against, I think one was goalless, one another one was 1-1 against Stoke City. And that essentially, well, I wouldn't say cost us the title. Many other games did, many other draws did. But that was 4 points lost in those games. And that was quite painful to take. And let's not forget the end of the 14-15 season. Not a single Stoke fan would ever forget that game, just as Liverpool fans would never forget that game. Remember the scoreline there? I know it was a away game. It was the last game of the season, which mattered little, basically. But still, it's kind of a banana slip thing for Liverpool. And I wouldn't go as far as making, you know, very bold predictions right now, saying that, you know, we are on a roll, Liverpool are unstoppable. We kind of seemed that way about maybe a month and a half ago, even when we had to grind out the difficult results like against Swansea. You know, right now it seems that there are little, not cracks, but certain flaws in the system that we play, which can be easily rectified. And, it's not such a great major tragedy. We're still in a much better place than all of us expected that we would be by Christmas. But you can expect some kind of, you know, fuck up to happen occasionally. And I don't want Stoke City game on Tuesday to be that one. But I really don't feel like we are in a position to say we're going to win it 5-0. It is a tough game. It is a tough opponent. It is a much stronger opponent than the very same Stoke City last year. They've also had a good run, even though the last three games were, you know, left much to be desired. Let's not forget Stoke's October, when they drew with Manchester United away at Old Trafford. This is a team full of surprises. I would still say it's going to be a tough affair. I would go for a 2-1 Liverpool win, but I wouldn't be completely shocked if it's a draw.
And you never seem to really know what you're going to get from a team around this time of year. I think Liverpool have often disappointed me around this time of year, to be honest. When you've had a good time with your family, you're getting ready to watch the game, and then there's a horror show. But hopefully it might be discussed before it's all been sorted. Not today, not on the 27th, rather. Stoke are going to show up against Chelsea. That's what's going to happen. But I'd probably agree with you guys. I think it could. I'm always expecting a fuck up, so it could be a goal somewhere here and there, and that we concede. But I reckon 2-1, 3-1 at most. Anyway, guys, I'm going to wrap up the pod now. But I just thank you so much for coming on, Adam, for all the insight into Stoke, and best of luck for the season, of course, after the 27th. And Yaro.
Thank you.
And Yaro as well. Thanks so much for all your insight with Liverpool as usual.
Yeah. Always a pleasure. Let's hope that Stoke City really do show up for the Chelsea game.
Oh, God, really
that might be even more important than the Tuesday's affair.
I'll take 3 points out of six. That's fine.
Yeah, definitely.
Make them at Stamford Bridge, please.
I think that's probably the perfect note to end on. So to everyone who's listened, I hope you have a very nice Christmas, and thanks for listening. We'll be back covering City in a few days' time. Sports Social Podcast Network.